the world. Behind the Black, happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman, the annual subscription or donation. Most welcome, because we're going space exploring with Bob. First, to the most important star in the cosmos, our sun. Watching the sun and its sunspots is a way of talking about what little we know about the sun. However, there is this term I've learned to use from Bob, solar maximum. Bob, are we in a solar maximum? Can we tell? What does it mean?
Well, no, we don't know. We really don't know. In fact, that's the most important lesson one can take from the solar cycle, the 11-year solar cycle, where sunspots get inactive and then get active over 11 years and goes up and down. And it's been doing this every 11 years now for about 250 years. The one lesson we can take from it is we really don't know very much. What we do know is that the sun has been ramping up towards maximum now since about 2020. And based upon the predictions of solar scientists, it would be a certain level of activity. It would be high or a weak maximum. And that maximum would occur sometime around 2025, 26, in 25. That's the prediction. There were two different predictions. One was a very active, powerful maximum, and one was calling for a weak maximum. And, of course, the sun continues to do nothing that was predicted. It's been consistently much more active than predicted, and it looked like, and it looks now, appears, I do this monthly, so I give a real sense of how the sun's activity is developing. It really does appear now that the sun has reached a peak, a preliminary peak in a solar maximum. And what looks like is going to happen is the same thing that happened back in 2014, 13, in the previous maximum. We're going to have a double peaked maximum. We've seen the first peak. We're now in that saddle in between the peaks, it looks like. And sometime in the next year or so, it'll do another peak, and then it'll start to ramp down to minimum. That's my prediction. Is it going to be right? I haven't the faintest idea, and no one should take my prediction with any seriousness. But I will tell you that it's not much better than any prediction coming from the solar scientists, because, once again, we do not understand the fundamental processes that cause this cycle. We know it has to do with the magnetic field of the sun and its flipping of polarity every 11 years. But why it does this, and how and what the details are, remain unknown, John.
Juno is a NASA probe, very successful, to Jupiter, and Bob is taking us to a moon of Jupiter, Io, which looks like one hot spot. What am I looking at, Bob?
Yes, Io is the closest big Galilean moon to Jupiter, and because of its orbit and location around Jupiter, it is subject to very, very intense tidal forces, which literally pull that planet apart continuously and cause volcanoes everywhere. The whole planet is covered with volcanic lava. And so Juno made its second its closest flyby of Io, earlier this week, got within 932 miles, and so, of course, it took pictures. Its camera's not high resolution, but they do give us more data about the surface. We haven't had good pictures like this in 20 years since Galileo was there. And so I posted one of those pictures and provided links to two others. The pictures include showing changes from the last flyby in December. One picture shows plumes of a volcanic eruption on the horizon. And the picture I posted behind the black shows a shield volcano with a gigantic lava flow going away from it. And once again, this just gives us a sense of this really alien volcanic-covered planet, John.
And the source of energy is gravity?
Yeah, literally gravity. Because it's so close to Jupiter, and Jupiter has such a powerful gravitational field, one side of Io has a different gravitational pull than the other side, because just that little difference in the width, the diameter of the planet causes that. And that tug causes the interior to get heated and results in volcanic activity.
And these volcanoes are similar to the volcanoes we have on Earth. They're not water volcanoes or ice volcanoes.
No, this is all lava. Yeah, absolutely, John. This is metal. And we don't have all the details. There could be water involved as well, but it's definitely internal metal lava like on Earth.
Does this mean that Io has a hot core, that is
without question. Yes, a very hot core, lots of liquid in the center of iron.
So it's a living body then. It's not tectonically inert. It's not dead like the moon. It's
body. Yes, it's very active. Absolutely.
We move from Io with its volcanoes to the surface of the moon. Is this Slim, Bob?
Yes, this is Slim's last picture before I've got it posted on Behind the Black. The last picture that Slim took, looking to the southwest across Scioli Crater, which is about 900 feet across. It landed near Scioli Crater. Slim managed to get its power turned on again when the sun hit its solar panels just before sunset. It worked for two Earth days before the sunset. They shut it down for the long 14-day long lunar night. Whether it'll come back to life again when the sun rises again is questionable. It's not really expected. But if it does, that would be a great achievement for Japan. Nonetheless, Japan's lunar land was successful. It proved that it could do a precise, autonomous robot landing on a planet within a very small target zone, which means you can go many places that would be very rough and dangerous. And even though it did land upside down, it did it successfully. So that was a successful mission.
Is there a Slim 2 on the way?
No. Well, there's lots of other landers on the way. I mean, Japan's got a partnership with India to do a lander next year. There's lots of other landers. They're not going to fly so Slim again because it was only to prove the technology of landing. Now they know that, they can use that technology on all future landers that Japan is partnered with. Others will, of course, try to get that same technology, and Japan might share it. It might not. We'll see.
A meteorite lands near Berlin, and they found it. How did they do that, Bob?
This was the eighth time that a meteorite was discovered only hours before it was going to hit the Earth. And so because it hadn't hit the Earth yet, they could get a good trajectory of its orbit and its impact on Earth. So they knew a very good landing zone. They could really pin down where it was going to land, pretty small area, which meant they could go out and try to find it, which is what they did. And so meteorite hunters, amateurs and professionals, went hunting in the target zone, and they found the meteorite. They found pieces of it. And it appears to be a very unusual asteroid. It's an Aubrite, I think is what they call it. Yeah, Aubrite. It's an Aubrite type of a chondrite. And this is unusual mineralogy, but it's important because they can learn more about how the solar system's makeup is from such asteroids.
Bob Zimmerman, it's happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman. Your subscriptions and donations are most welcome. This is CBS Eye on the World with Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman. I'm John Mack.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.